Who is your daddy?
I am your father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Welcome to episode 6 of Fathers of the Grind. I'm here with Derek. Hey, Derek.
Hey, how are you, Tim?
My name is Tim, and we are here to talk video games. Now, we don't have a lot of time. We've got a lot of kids. I mean, combined, we have 8 children that we care for. So demanding of our time. So anyway, we are here to talk about some video games. There's a lot of news. We're going to cover some news in a little bit. Of course, as always, we're going to cover the games that we've been playing. And we're going to talk about how we're doing with our 4 in February challenge. Now, some of you remember last episode, I said we won't have time to record, but things have worked out so far. And so here we are, episode 6, right on schedule. But thank you in advance for bearing with us if we do have to kind of lengthen the time between episodes over the next few weeks. As you all are familiar, schedules can change, and sometimes recording can't happen as much as we'd like it to. So we'll keep you guys apprised to that as that happens. So, all right, Derek, let's get right into it, man. Go ahead and tell me, how's your 4 in February going, and what are you playing?
Okay, well, I'm pretty much sticking to playing the 4 in February. There's only one game I started outside of the 4 in February, so let's cover the 4 in February real quick. I switched my lineup, I think, last week. I even shared it on episode. What episode was that last week?
It does. 5.1.
5, 6, 9, 6.
Yeah, that's the one.
Did I catch a niner in there?
No. A niner.
So, the four I was doing was Telltale's Game of Thrones, Tales from the Borderlands, Borderlands the pre-sequel, and then it was originally A Link to the Past, and I swapped that out for Resident Evil Remastered, or the high-def
remastered. I'd like to speak for the community and say that we are all highly disappointed in your failure with Link to the Past, yet again.
Look, I got technically all year to do that game, which it may take me all year to do it. Not because it's long, just the motivation. It's just not there.
So it's going to be on your 4 in February, your more in March, your again in April. It's going to be on all your lists.
Oh, if you can push the back. Again in April. Although I never played it, so it's not really again.
No, it's not again.
So going off those games, I completed Borderlands, the pre-sequel, already. I think I talked about that last week. I really need to get a better memory.
Yeah,
I believe we did talk about Borderlands, the pre-sequel. I finished that last week. And then my focus was this past week with Tales from the Borderlands, which I am happy to announce I have finished that as well.
All right.
So two games are knocked out of the 4 in February. And then I don't want to say I'm halfway through Resident Evil Remastered, but I'm probably pretty close to halfway through it.
Okay.
Really, really enjoying that. It's not like a pain to log in and play that game. I'm enjoying it the entire time I'm playing it. Only one frustrating thing is I really hate the dogs in Resident Evil.
Oh, yeah. My limited memory of Resident Evil includes hatred of those dogs. I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously the controls are really improved in Resident Evil Remaster, and like I talked about in a couple shows back, I had finished Resident Evil Zero as well. So they've done a great job of either allowing you to do the tank controls or the new improved controls. And the new improved controls are really done pretty darn well for the type of game it is.
Nice.
But it's still, and I can only remember what the tank controls were like, it still can be difficult with something like a dog. Like a zombie, it's pretty simple. They're slow. Most of them are. Some of them run at you. But they're generally slow, and you have time to move your gun and aim it to where you want. Whereas a dog, it's quickly on you. Like, as soon as you hear them, they're on top of you, you know, ripping your throat out. So
let me ask you this. Are those dogs, can you escape from them in Resident Evil Remastered? I kind of forget the way you can move and how quickly you can escape from enemies, really.
Well, if they get you and you do not have a defense weapon equipped, then you're basically, you can escape eventually. They'll, like, bite at you for a little while, and then you'll, like, shrug them off. But let's say I have a grenade as my defense weapon, then I'll shove a grenade in their mouth, and then they'll blow up.
Oh, yeah. Standard and dog it's like defense. Sure.
Yeah, it's like an automated animation. Like I had a grenade, I had, like, three of them. And I was walking through a heavy zombie-infested area. When I say heavy, probably like three or four in one little corridor. And I made a mistake. I was trying to dodge one of them, and I ran into it. And the game immediately, once it grabbed me, had me automatically go into the animation of putting a grenade into the zombie's mouth. And then I had to run away from it, and it blew up, and it took out itself and another zombie.
Doesn't that call other zombies in, or is it not really that kind of a game?
It's not really that type of game.
Okay.
It's, you know, there, you're always going to have zombies around randomly, but it's not like a Dead Rising or something like that where you have like a million, or even Dying Light where if you make noise, a million zombies come at you.
Yeah, I've just played so many zombie games since, again, like I've said many times, my limited experience with Resident Evil. Sometimes I forget kind of the, just the way they've set it up. Like, you talked about getting bit by the dogs, and my first thought was, wouldn't that pretty much mean you're dead? Because you got bit by something that's infected. But, again, yeah, not really the type of game that is, I suppose.
Yeah, and you obviously have herbs that heal you. Oh, so
herbs, not, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you smoke a little weed.
Get those herbs right going.
Yeah, as soon as you get bit, smoke a joint, and you're all right.
Got it.
So, yeah, I cannot highly recommend those two games any more than I am. I'm practically pleading with anybody who owns a PS4 and Xbox One or even PC to get the collection. If you've never played them, go into it with an open mind, understanding that they are older games and that they are considered classics.
Right.
But if you have played them, just enjoy. I know I had a great conversation with a couple of guys in our Platinum Achievements group, Frank Clark, shout out to you, even though you'll never listen to the show. He is a huge Resident Evil fan like me, so we were having a good conversation reminiscent on Resident Evil's, not Zero, but Resident Evil, and then we started talking heavily about Resident Evil 2, because they're actually doing I think it's a complete redo of the game. Like, I don't think it's just a remaster. I think they're going to redo a lot of the game. So,
well, don't forget our friend Brian Pelfrey there too. I remember when I first mentioned, because I really thought I was going to start spending some time with some of these Resident Evil games, and it turns out I haven't taken time yet. Doesn't mean I won't, but those got put on the back burner.
Yeah, speaking of slackers, but no big deal.
And I know. So anyway, yeah, shout out to him too. I know he's a big fan of that series, and as far as I know, has played many, if not all, of those games too. So yeah, we definitely have some members of our community that are big Resident Evil fans. So
yeah, and Kyle Neely was another person that was a huge fan of the Resident Evil games, and he's really excited about Resident Evil 2, and that will definitely be a game that I will buy as soon as it comes out, and I will play, especially with my experience with Resident Evil 0 and thus far with Resident Evil Remastered.
Cool.
So enough on my four in February. Those are the four that I've been focusing on, but there is one game that just released this past Tuesday. Again, we're recording on a Thursday night, that I purchased, and I haven't gotten to play a lot, but I got to put about an hour into it, and that's Firewatch. So considering it's a shorter game, you can beat it anywhere from 3 to 5, 6 hours, depending on how fast and if you're following a guide or if you're just playing it the first time fresh. I'm pretty far into it considering, you know,
how short it is.
Short length.
Right.
But I'm not really that far into it because I got lost in the very, very freaking beginning of the game. But I so far really, really like this game.
Looks cool, right? I mean, the visuals are great.
It's a gorgeous game. Like, especially when they first put you in the forest or in the park, and you're just walking around through all the trees. It's just gorgeous. The voice acting is, I could say this might be the best voice acting I've ever heard. And there's a lot of talented voice actors out there, and I don't think I've ever heard these two people that I'm talking about right now.
I didn't recognize their voices either.
I was going to say, I've never recognized their voices. Maybe that's why it's so fresh and so good. But so far, again, I'm not very far in. they're really good, and I'm really enjoying the dialogue. The gameplay, kind of, if you don't know what Firewatch is, it's basically a walking simulator. I don't think there's many puzzles or anything like that. It's more go here, talk to this person through a radio, and there's kind of like a mystery that you're trying to unravel. I haven't really gotten to that. I'm still in the intro part where I'm getting to know my boss and kind of just doing little errands for the park. But so far, so good. I would like to finish it, but my main goal is to knock out these four in February, so I've really been trying to stick with Resident Evil Remastered.
But you might actually end up, assuming you... I mean, you're on pace right now. You could finish five in February, especially if one of them is Firewatch. It's a little shorter.
Yeah, well, if people actually followed the rules and paid attention, Tim, new games don't count as four in February.
Well, let's go ahead. That's a good transition into my four in February list. I went ahead and swapped out Hearts of Stone from The Witcher 3 to something I want to play kind of at a more leisurely pace, just because I love that game so much. So as I'm kind of rushing through these four games to finish them this month, I do want to complete the challenge. I didn't really think through the fact that it's supposed to be a backlog game, so I went ahead and swapped out Hearts of Stone, the DLC for Witcher, for Firewatch.
Well, that's the thing. So you swapped it out.
I did.
But since I'm the boss, I'm rejecting that swap.
It's more of like a forgiveness than permission situation we have going on here.
No, that's not how it works. So I'm going to rewrite your list, and Firewatch doesn't count. You just basically wasted your time.
Well, it was not a waste of time, though. It's a great game. I finished it. I believe I finished it pretty much all in that one day. I stayed home that day. I was sick.
Yeah,
kids had a snow day, and on and off throughout the day, I was able to put in some time here and there. And then at the end of the day, I was able to wrap it up. It's not that long of a game. Like you mentioned, if you go really quickly, you could finish it in, let's say, three and a half hours. You'll probably miss some things, though, if you go that quickly. I think a full playthrough with really experiencing everything and investigating all the items and all of the just all the different things you can start conversations about. So as you look at items, you have the option to pick it up. You can look at it, and you can also radio in to, like you mentioned, your boss, the other character you're talking with, and you can radio in and talk to them about it. You can report it. So whether it's an empty beer can, or whether it's a book, or it's something that you found out in the wilderness, something that's in your tower, you can radio in and begin a chat about really any of those things. So I liked doing that because, like you said, the dialogue is so good and well acted and believable. I didn't for a minute think that that it was anything other than a well acted movie, almost, with how good that. And I'm not trying to overemphasize it. The voice acting was that good, and the reason it stood out to me was based on our conversation last week about older games that don't really hold up in terms of things like voice acting. And I think Resident Evil, as much as you were praising them earlier, probably fall into that category of some cheesy voice acting.
Top of the line. I would actually probably like Firewatch and then Resident Evil as two of the best games ever.
Oh, man. No, the Firewatch voice acting is so good. Resident Evil's is not so great. I'm also playing through Life is Strange. That's my second game I'm trying to tackle for the 4 in February. I just finished episode 1 and episode 2. I'm getting ready to start hopefully this weekend. And I'm actually hoping to do episodes 2 and 3 this weekend. Really, really good games. I'm speaking of good acting and good voice actors. Pretty good performances in that game as well. I'm enjoying it. It's basically a Telltale game, but it's made by a different company. So the vibe is different. The style of, you know, the way that you respond to the choices you have and the dialogue style is different.
Well, hopefully it runs better than a Telltale game.
I think it does. I mean, you've played it. I haven't finished it yet. I think it runs better than the Telltale game. But it still has that similar vibe where you're walking around exploring the environment. You can look at everything. You don't have to. You make a ton of decisions, and it keeps telling you, hey, this is going to have consequences, which is terrifying. But it keeps you moving forward. So there's some really neat stuff in Life is Strange, so I'm liking that. I don't think I love it, but I am liking it a lot.
What episode are you in?
I just finished 1.
Yeah, after I finished 1, I liked it. I wouldn't say I was attached to it, because that's why I didn't buy the season pass, because I was like, I'll just wait till it's cheap. Because while I praised episode 1, it obviously didn't hook me. Because I normally buy the season passes like right away if I really, really want to play them. This one didn't do it. But I think I'd like to... Oh, I know I would like to hear your reaction after you get through definitely episode 3.
I'm not going to hype it, but 2 and 3 are the kind of the highlights.
2 and 3 get more interesting. 4 does a good job of kind of getting you set up for 5, and then 5 was kind of, for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, that's kind of the overall feeling that I've gotten from listening to others talk about it too. So that's pretty consistent. So looking forward to that. That is my third game in the 4 in February. I should have mentioned the first one I finished was Ori and the Blind Forest and then Firewatch. I'm counting it. I don't care what you say.
No, you're not.
And then Life is Strange. I'm in progress right now. And my last one, which I'm hoping to wrap up Life is Strange over the next, let's say, week and a half. And then that'll give me a solid 2 weeks to close out the month to finish out with Rise of the Tomb Raider. And that's one of those games that I really just want to play that and only that, you know, other than Rocket League, of course. So
yeah, I know. I don't even talk about Rocket League anymore, but of course that's definitely a game. I play it every day.
It's ongoing. We'll talk about it a little bit later here with some gaming news. The other game I've been playing on and off, especially if the TV's occupied, is I've been jumping back in a little bit to Fire Emblem Awakening.
Nice.
The 3DS game. And for a few reasons. Number one, I just realized that I can't remember if I actually beat that game. I'm pretty sure I did. But I've got 80 hours in it. I have this unstoppable army that I've put together, and I know I spent a ton of time power leveling everybody and, you know, earning that special move with all the dark flyers to get that extra set of moves if you defeat an enemy, and it's just really, really fun. And so I jump back into that, and if I did beat it, then I don't have any kind of save that indicates that. So I was like, man, I better actually complete this story.
I was gonna say, you must be really into the story if you have no clue if you beat it.
Well, I remember what's happening, which is funny enough. Like, I jumped back in. I was like, oh, here's the next story mission. Oh, this is, I'm 99% sure, the final story mission. So I think I must have already beaten it, but it must not have an incredible ending because I don't remember it. Mm. I do remember some really key moments and early in the story and then right in the middle when some big stuff happens in that game. Really, really cool. But the ending itself, if I saw it, it's funny that I can't even remember if I saw it or not. It must not have stuck with me. And that's funny because any of the other Fire Emblem games, I don't remember their endings either, but I could point out specific story moments, you know, throughout those games, whether it's at start or in the middle. There were some big moments. I can't remember the ending, so there you go.
I know I didn't finish it, but I probably put in about 40 hours.
Yeah, I looked at my hour count, and it's up to 80 on that.
That's game. Why, even though I'm really, really excited, and I know I said this in the podcast, I'm really excited for the new one. I know I'm not going to beat it. Not 2 full games and then DLC. I'm just more getting it all because I just want to support the franchise. And then hopefully hopefully I'll play a good amount, but I don't expect I'll beat.
Yeah. So I'm going to beat it just so I can be sure and, you know, just for my peace of mind. So I can sleep at night, you know, without laying there staring into the darkness wondering, did I actually beat this game that's one of my favorites? I'm pretty sure that I did, and that's really weird. Most games I can remember definitively if I did or not, but when I fired this one back up just to do some random battles and kind of get a feel for Fire Emblem again, I was like, I'm not sure if I actually beat this. So we'll see. I'll finish that up. It's fun, though. I mean, now I'm really excited after firing up Awakening. Now I'm looking forward to what they do with Fates.
Yeah, I probably should just, you know, go back to it just to kind of get a feel again.
Yeah, Fates is coming. It is coming.
Because it has been a while since I played it.
So we've covered a whole bunch of different types of games. I mean, and that's one thing that's really neat about our conversations is we go from a Telltale-style game to a walking simulator game to a survival horror with Resident Evil, and then something like Ori and the Blind Forest, a challenging, fast-paced platformer, and then, of course, you know, getting into something like Rise of the Tomb Raider, this big action-adventure game, and Borderlands, first-person kind of RPG shooting game. So one thing I wanted to ask you about, and this is our main topic for the show, we're going to jump into this right away instead of getting into news. Tell me about your favorite, here's two things, your favorite gaming genre, if you had to pick one, maybe you could pick two, I suppose. And then also I want to talk about our least favorites, and I guess the best way to define least favorite would be, what's the genre of games that you just struggled to get into personally? Like, even if there's games that look cool and you think, I should like this, but I just can't get into this genre for whatever reason. So I'll let you think about that for a minute.
Okay.
Think about your favorites, and I'll share my favorites first. So when I think of gaming genres, the types of games that undoubtedly they hook me, they interest me, I'm excited about them when they're announced, is going to be that action-adventure RPG combo. Everything from Rise of the Tomb Raider, which doesn't really have as much in the RPG realm, I suppose, but of course The Witcher. I would say Assassin's Creed, some of those games can fall into that category. That type of game really truly is my favorite. Those are the ones that I'll lean towards the most. And what about you? What would you call your favorite gaming genre?
Okay, well, that's really tough. I can give you two that I would say favorite.
Yeah, even
I
if really they're totally separate. That's fine.
I would say action adventure / third person shooters. Cover base. So you think about Uncharted or Rise of the Tomb Raider, stuff like that.
Okay.
So I really enjoy those. That's why I'm really excited about Quantum Break. That is
Maybe Win Back from the N64. Remember that game?
Yeah, no. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Someone out there listening knows about Win Back.
Tim, nobody knows what the hell you're talking about.
It was a good one. All right, continue.
And if somebody does, they can call me out and say they know about that game. The other would be Western RPGs. I really enjoy games like Dragon Age, Mass Effect, basically BioWare. But I do prefer Western RPGs over JRPGs, although I do enjoy JRPGs as well.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of knew the BioWare type answer. I didn't know the cover-based shooter one. That's kind of cool. So you really did like the Uncharted games, right? All three of them?
Yeah, I would say they were my... I'm trying to think before I speak. I want to say Uncharted is my favorite Sony exclusive. Besides Twisted Metal, if you want to go nostalgic.
I got you.
I would say current, yes, Uncharted. And then, I would say Rise of the Tomb Raider for me is... Well, see, it's hard because I really enjoyed Rise of the Tomb Raider, and I think I need a second playthrough before I deem it like, oh, it's my favorite. And the reason I say that is because I did play the reboot 5 times, and I absolutely loved all the action.
I played it once. It was great.
The story and the characters are lame outside of the main character. But other than that, the gameplay is top-notch. And I felt like even the set pieces were really well done. All of that. Rise of the Tomb Raider, I would have to play it again and go, okay, yeah, I feel the same way still. Because I've only played it once, and while I really, really enjoyed it, and I would like to say it's my favorite third-person shooter of all time, I'm not going to say it right now, but I think potentially it could be.
No,
but yeah, I really do enjoy those.
I might have been wrong in using that as an example then. So action-adventure, sure, it falls in that category. Would you say, and I haven't played it yet, I'm going to this month, does Rise of the Tomb Raider have any aspects to it that you would say kind of have an RPG flair to it at all, or not really? Does it not have any of those aspects?
I think the only thing you could say that's RPG is, and it was still in the reboot, so you've played the reboot.
I have.
You can level up your guns and your character.
So it's really light RPG elements. Maybe.
RPG elements.
Yeah.
But it's not like... It's not like a true RPG where, like, let's say you didn't level up anything, you could still probably beat the game.
Okay. So something more akin to The Witcher would fall into that category, but I also do really like just flat-out action-adventure games. So those would be the two. Like, if you're going to pick, that action-adventure third-person shooter as your one, and then what was your other one?
It would be Western RPGs.
The Western RPGs, yeah. Very different style of games. Then my first one would be kind of the... action-adventure leaning towards RPG, but then also the action-adventure leaning towards stealth, where you've got something like Splinter Cell or Hitman, Assassin's Creed, I guess, falls into that too, depending on the way you look at it. So those can be very different genres too, so those are some of my favorites. But the reason I want to do that is I want to give a positive spin to the negativity we're about to spew, and that is, what is your least favorite genre, or maybe even multiple genres? And that doesn't mean that you think it's bad or that, you know, there's no good games in that genre. You just haven't been able to get into it yourself. You know that if a game comes out and that genre is attached to it, it's probably not going to be for you. What's the first one that comes to mind for you?
I would say real-time strategies. My brother used to play them on his PC. I think he played Command & Conquer a lot and some other ones. And I used to just not really watch him a lot, but just watch... kind of casually, and I was just like, I have zero interest in even trying.
So even watching it, you didn't like.
Yeah, I hated it, and I always got annoyed when he would play that game, or those games.
Hmm.
So that's easily the first one that comes to my mind.
Have you tried any recently? Like Command & Conquer is like the one of the originals, not the original, but it's one of the originals. You know, it's one of the ones that kind of blazed the trail.
I'm willing to try Halo Wars 2.
Wait,
because,
is that coming?
Yeah, it's going to come soon. I think it's coming this year.
Nice.
Because I do enjoy the Halo universe.
Okay.
And I heard Halo Wars was like the type of game. I remember, I believe it was from Ryan McCaffrey, who I don't always agree with, but he was talking about Halo
from
Wars.
From IGN?
Yes, from IGN. Mm-hmm. Podcast Unlock was saying that he's not, I don't think he likes real-time strategies. Of course, he's a Halo fanboy, so he's obviously going to give Halo Wars a shot, and he did, and he said Halo Wars is like the game that you play if you've never liked real-time strategies, because they make it real simplistic and easy to get into them.
Well, there you go.
So, I will give Halo Wars 2 a shot.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll be a day one purchase, or if it'll be something I just do down the line. But I'll definitely... I never bought Halo Wars.
Okay.
But I think I'll give Halo Wars 2 a shot. But the second one that comes to my mind is... I don't like puzzle games. I do like to solve stuff.
Okay.
Like, it's funny, like, I always... Since we started this podcast, I think the last few weeks I've complained about games that make me think or stop the flow of a game because they want to do some stupid puzzle. But I've really gotten into Resident Evil Zero and Resident Evil Remastered, which the entire game is just one big puzzle.
Yeah, it's just set in like a horror survival setting, but really there's lots of puzzle solving in there.
Exactly. It's a lot of like puzzle solving, or here, let me put you in this mansion and only one door's unlocked. Figure out how to unlock the rest.
But I mean, is that kind of nostalgia for you though? Because you played those games ages ago and liked them. Is that why you're still okay with them now? Even though they're puzzles?
I think it's because their puzzles aren't... I haven't hit one that's real, real difficult.
Okay, so it's not so much the puzzles themselves so much as when they're challenging to the point of frustrating.
Yeah, when I say puzzle game, even though I was bringing up Resident Evil, I'm thinking about like a game like even Portal. I beat the first Portal. It was the worst night of my life. And the reason why I beat it is because I didn't... Of course, I'm talking about games now.
Overdramatic.
Yeah, a little overdramatic. But, you know, I
but, okay. I loved Portal 1. It's great.
Yeah, I played Portal 1 and I beat it. I think it took me one night to do it.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
I'm not... Well, I was exaggerating, but I'm really not. It was probably the worst night of my life.
Wow.
I did it because my friend, a really good friend, was like, you gotta play this game. It's so well done. It's hilarious. Mm-hmm. And at this time, I was a little bit... I was a big-time gamer. Like, I own hundreds of 360 games and stuff like that. But I wasn't, like, as knowledgeable as I would say I am now. Like, I didn't pay attention to genres. And I wasn't like, oh, I don't like puzzle games. I was like, oh, this is a good game, therefore I buy.
I'm with you. I was the same way. Yep.
Yeah, so he told me it was a good game, so I bought it. So I started playing it, and I'm like, okay, you know, the first few puzzles or whatever, they're pretty simplistic. And, you know, the game's real good at kind of getting you hooked because... Not only are the puzzles pretty simple in the beginning, but they're funny. The game's funny. It makes fun of you. It makes fun of your characters. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Gladys, or GLaDOS, however you say her name, she's one of the coolest, funniest characters. She's so funny.
So I really liked Portal, but it also is extremely, extremely frustrating game. In fact, I believe at the very, very end, I tried so hard to beat it without cheating, because that was what my friend kept saying. He's like, don't cheat, don't cheat. But I think I cheated on one or two of the puzzles, because I was like, oh, I can't even say it, because we tried to keep the show clean, but F this game. You know, I was so...
So you mean basically, by cheating, you mean that you looked it up? Looked
up
the answer
I had
online?
To look up. I'm just going by memory. I'm pretty sure I had to look up the last few puzzles, because I was completely... confused, and I was just running in circles, and it was like 3 or 4 in the morning, and I knew I was at the end. I wanted to beat it. So yeah, extremely long story that should have been short. I'm not big into puzzle games. There's certain ones I would give a shot. Like, I have no problem giving The Witness a shot. I won't pay $40 for it. I understand it's getting praised. Do I think most of the praise is legitimate? Yeah. Do I think some of it's just Sony fanboys excited because they've got an exclusive? Yeah.
Well, and I don't even know if it's Sony fanboys. I mean, I'm sure there are some of those.
Yeah.
But I feel like more than that, there's just there's an excitement for the game, and there's a hype, and it's the big game of the winter.
Yeah, but they did this with like Journey and all those. And I know you liked Journey, but that game was not what people made it out to be.
It was overrated.
It was completely, and I don't like to call things overrated because I'm like, well, you know, if a bunch of people like it, that's their right.
No,
but I definitely think that was.
That's not to diminish certain people's experience with it. Don't get me wrong. Like, certain people had a very personal and emotional connection to a game like Journey or Flower even. I just feel like they're overrated in general. They are not overall best games of all the amazing games that are being created each year. I would very fiercely debate those being better than all the other games that came out around them. That being said, that's not to diminish the personal experience someone has with those, but I'm with you. Like, those are overrated. But I feel like The Witness might be a little bit of a different beast compared to those.
Yeah, it's not going to be like a Portal. It's not going to draw me in with humor. I even had somebody tell me online, like, don't buy The Witness, Derek. You're just gonna bitch about it.
They're trying to help you.
Yeah, because they're like, they know I buy a lot of games, and I'm like, just don't do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, either here's my options. I wait for Tim to buy it. That's you, Tim. Or I'll buy it when it's like $10, but I won't.
Well,
I've got
some good news for you. It looks like I got a notice from Sony PlayStation Store saying that they've refunded my pre-order for Hitman. And now I can go back in and then pre-order the intro pack for Hitman.
Okay.
And we're not really going to get into the Hitman discussion. But basically, you still can get the $60 pack, which I think gives you access to everything. Or
you can
just pre-order the $15 pack, which gives you the intro mission and access to the beta. And if you like that, then you can add on. There's going to be a very easy one-click buy the rest of the content option.
I thought the $15, Kaz Harai said that was just to buy, like, the loading screen.
Oh, that's all I wanted, man. That's it. That's all I wanted.
That you could pre-
Oh, man.
Still
Kaz was on fire today, too. You guys, we're not going to take time to go look at it, but if you are on Twitter, or whatever, you don't have to be on Twitter, just go to twitter.com and look for Kaz, CEO Kaz Harai's account. He's been on fire again today. He's had some good ones.
Even though it's a fake account, he makes me love Sony more.
Oh, he's great. He's so great. Okay, so your least favorite, if you had to pick two, and again, this doesn't mean that you're saying all puzzle games and RTS games are crap.
Yeah, because I just said I like Portal and Portal 2. Portal 2 is better than Portal. But I would say real-time strategy is my least favorite. But I'm still open to playing.
Well, Portal 2 has that Portal 1 doesn't. Not only is that longer and beefier, and it's got more of a story as opposed to just puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has Steven Merchant, and he is brilliant in that game.
He's the British guy?
Yeah, he's the main little guy that starts with you.
Yeah,
and things
he's
happen
pretty
after
hilarious.
That. Yeah, he's awesome.
Isn't he,
and then him
he,
and GLaDOS,
isn't
their
he
interactions.
Isn't the jerk in Assassin's Creed?
I don't know if he's in Assassin's Creed. You know what?
Like,
his voice does sound a lot like him.
The guy from the modern day. He's the jerk.
Might be. He's well known for his roles in Ricky Gervais stuff, like shows like Extras, which is a hilarious HBO show from back in the day.
He got glasses. Is he like a tall blonde?
He's tall and thin. He's got glasses. He was in Ladies, Hello Ladies, I think is a show that he does.
Yeah, I saw his commercial where he's like walking down the street and he thinks all the chicks are checking him out. I think it's
yeah,
him.
But they're looking at the car.
But they're checking the car out. Yeah, I know who he is.
Yeah, he's very funny.
I do enjoy him, and I have never beaten Portal 2, but I plan on at some point doing that.
I mean, that's a good one. That's a good one. I actually, sad story real quick, you guys. I still have the Xbox 360 case for Portal 2, and I don't know where the disc is. I don't know if I let someone borrow it, if maybe I left it. I know I had to replace my Xbox 360.
Go on Steam, and you can actually get Portal and Portal 2 combined for $5.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to do that. That's a good call.
Part of that sale. Okay. Yeah. Both of them.
Well, we got derailed a little bit. That's okay. Let's bring it back. We already talked about my favorite genres. Here's some of my least favorites. You listed two. I've actually got three that I really have trouble getting into. So when someone tells me that A fighting game is coming out.
Street Fighter.
And this really, what's that?
Street Fighter.
Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, Tekken, any of these games that are fighting games. They're cool games, and there's a part of me that's like, yeah, you used to really like these. You used to be great at Street Fighter II Turbo, and used to be okay at Mortal Kombat, and some of these others. And then I play them, and I'm like, no, this is just isn't doing it for me. Like, it's just, I'd have to put in a ton of time to get anywhere close to competent at that game to compete whatsoever, especially online. And even beyond that, it's just not something that's that fun. Like, with limited time, I don't know. You just kind of make a decision and make some cuts. And, man, fighting games are really the kind of games that I never get into. Street Fighter is the only exception because I do have Street Fighter 4 for the 3DS. And I actually did enjoy that quite a bit. I didn't love it. It still wasn't as good as the classics for me, like the old school Super Nintendo Street Fighter games. But I did like it.
Here's a challenge. Yeah. I really think you should. You know what? You should really scratch Firewatch. Okay, you don't have to put Hearts of Stone in because that is a longer experience.
Uh-huh.
But I think you should download Mortal Kombat X. Mm. I own that.
I don't know.
Just let me finish.
I'm already skeptical.
Download Mortal Kombat X. Go in story mode. Put it on very easy, whatever. Something real simple.
So like a baby mode, like Wolfenstein with a little bonnet?
Yeah. Put it on baby mode. Go through it and then tell me if you enjoyed not only the fighting, but the story, the characters, and all that, and I'd like a review. And since I'm your boss, I expect that review done by February 20th, 2016.
February 20th? That's 9 days.
Yeah, get to work.
Oh, man. That's not happening.
No, I really think you should do it. You just said you're not big into fighting games. Give mm-hmm. this one a shot. It's got a story. Mm-hmm. We all know Tim likes cutscenes. If you don't know, Tim likes any game that has a cutscene. So
that's
it
not,
can be the shittiest game in the world. That's if it's not got accurate. A cutscene, he's gonna
that is not accurate. That
he's
is
gonna
not
praise
accurate.
It. Like reviewers will be like, this game is complete crap. It's a 3 out of 10. Tim plays it. Oh, it's got a cutscene. 9 out of 10.
It's completely broken. You actually can't even move, but those cutscenes, am I right?
Phenomenal.
No, I don't love every game with cutscenes, but I do, it is a pet peeve of mine. Pet peeve time, you guys, getting to know us a little bit closer. I hate it when I'm, especially I'm playing online multiplayer, whether it's MMO or Destiny or when I played Star Wars, The Old Republic, when I am told I have to skip the cutscenes because whether someone else has seen it before or they just don't care.
Yeah.
I don't know. That just bugs me, man. I'm like, I want to at least one time experience what the game creator put together for me, even if it's bad, if it's cheesy, if it's not important, I don't care. And that's why I ended up not doing a ton of co-op stuff, but whatever. Cutscenes. All right.
For your cutscenes.
So fighting games in general, I really can't think of any that have come out in the last 15 plus years that I've gotten excited about. That's just me personally. All right, the next one would be racing games, with the exception of like super cartoony arcade stuff like Mario Kart. And remember old school Diddy Kong Racing? I used to like that one.
Yeah, I played that one.
But yeah, I can't really think of a whole lot of racing games that I've really gotten into. So,
Forza Horizon 2.
Forza Horizon 2 is a lot of fun. That's the first one since, like, I don't know, maybe Cruising USA.
Did you ever play Burnout?
Oh, you know what? Burnout's a good example of one that I thought was cool. I only played it with some friends in their dorm room. They had it, mm-hmm. and so I remember playing it a couple times. But watching someone else play it was fun, and playing it just to crash a few times. Total blast.
Yeah, you know what? And I think they're planning on bringing this back. And actually, I think we talked about a few weeks ago on our show how Criterion, the guys who created, I believe it's Criterion, mm-hmm. who created Burnout.
Yeah,
Burnout 3 is considered the best Burnout game by a lot of people. I personally like Burnout Paradise, but the reason why, and I do have very fond memories of Burnout 3. Is because there is a mode that is called the crash mode, which is all it is basically a crashing puzzle game.
I feel like that's what I played. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, that's probably the one you played because it was really popular mode. And basically you would start your car, you know, maybe in the middle of a highway, and then you'd have to drive and accelerate, and then you would have to figure out a way to get the most points in by causing carnage. And it wasn't easy. Like, some of them were pretty easy in the beginning to get, like, gold and stuff. But as you kept going from board to board or, you know, setup to setup, it got really difficult.
That's kind of cool. That's cool.
So that is one of them. That was the Criterion is making that new game that's a golf game, but they even said it's not really a golf game.
Well, it's actually former Criterion devs that now have their own studio.
Yeah, they've created their own studio, and so it's not actually Criterion because EA owns them.
Right.
But basically, they're creating a Burnout style, like Crash Mode style game, but with a golf game. So it's still going to be like a puzzle on how to destroy the most things that you can.
Let me say this. Let me explain a little bit why these two would be the top of my list on genres that I can't get into, because you're listing some good reminders of. You know, I have enjoyed, at times, fighting games in the past. Not many of them, but a few. And I do feel like there's potential to enjoy one in the future. Same thing with racing. Like, I have enjoyed some in the past. And as I've experienced with Forza Horizon 2, reminding me that, hey, some of these are really fun. Like, they're really pretty games. The cars can look amazing. The feeling of upgrading to a new one is great. So I can kind of recall that feeling of enjoying them. But here's the thing. There's no game in the last 15, 20 years, maybe even, for either of these genres, that when it was announced and released, I was excited about and wanted to go buy. These are games that, at most, I would head on down to Blockbuster or Hollywood Video or whatever, and rent. And then, you know, as the years went on, maybe Gamefly, I'd put it in my queue because I was curious about it and, you know, maybe fun with friends. They were never on my list of games to buy. And so that's probably why I think of them as genres that I can't really get into. I just don't get that excited about them. But as I've learned, and as you have reminded me just now, there are times that I've played those games, even if they weren't games I targeted as must-buys, that I've still had a lot of fun. So let me give you one. Let me give you one more.
Maybe it's just you're just a terrible person.
Must be that, yeah. It's a logical conclusion. All right, here's my third one. Those two are pretty broad. Fighting and racing, those are huge gaming genres, and I may have alienated some people who love those genres.
Hate you right now.
Hopefully the way that that we've talked about it, it doesn't make you feel like I hate all those games. It's just genres that I struggle to get into personally. Here's the third one that again, it's hit or miss. There's been a few that I've liked, but not many, and that is survival horror games, or really most horror games in general. Now, there have been some great ones that I've enjoyed. Like, I remember watching a friend and helping from the sideline, you know, navigator style, get through some of the old Silent Hill games.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I don't remember having a ton of fun so much as, like, it was something that we did together to hang out, and he was really into it. It wasn't really my thing. I never really wanted to play those games. There's a few that I've played that I loved. One of them was Eternal Darkness for the GameCube.
Yeah.
That was a very cool game. I don't know how it holds up now. I imagine it doesn't look all that great anymore.
No.
But Eternal Darkness, when I played it, was amazing. It was terrifying. It was creepy, but it was really cool. There's been a few others, like the old Silent Hills, like I mentioned. Resident Evil 4, I really liked that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the other ones, and I guess this is what it comes down to for me. I just get to the point where I'm like, this is just gross for the sake of being gross. Some weird monster that's mouth turns upside down and backwards, and a little girl crawls up onto the ceiling and looks at me with hair, you know, falling down her face and makes some creepy noise. And none of that really interests me in movies either. I'll watch them. Like, I've seen everything from The Ring to whatever else, all the popular horror movies, but they're not really my favorite genre of movie to go to either, to spend time watching. I'll watch them. Like, I watched Paranormal Activity out of curiosity. I watched Blair Witch Project back in the day out of curiosity. So they don't necessarily scare me and make me uncomfortable. They're just not really something that I enjoy watching that much. And those games, same way. I don't really necessarily enjoy most survival horror games. And even some of the newer ones, like the more indie darling ones, like Don't Starve.
Mm-hmm.
I started that game. And I think of that as kind of like a cartoony survival horror. It's just much different. And same thing. Like, yeah, it's okay, you know?
Yeah.
Just doesn't really do it for me, though. So those are the genres that would jump out at me as ones that I don't love. Although there are examples, as there are with fighting and racing, that have surprised me. So
I enjoy survival horror, but I can't play them a lot of times.
Why is that?
I get scared. I can't watch.
They're creepy, man.
I can't watch movies. Like, I just can't handle them.
Have you seen Paranormal Activity? Have you seen that movie?
No.
That was that first one. I'm talking about the first one. I didn't know what I was getting into. I had not read anything about it other than people are saying it's the scariest movie in years. And that one really, and I watched it all alone, like middle of the night. No one else was awake. I think we had just had our second. And so it was late at night. Everyone was asleep. And so, yeah, it was terrifying to watch that alone. That one, I will legit admit that I got scared. And I checked, I turned on all the lights in the house and checked to make sure everyone was okay. Like, it was one of those kind of movies.
Yeah. So I'm not, and I know it's, I'm like sitting here talking about how much I love Resident Evil, but I shared, before, I let my brother and all them play the Resident Evil games because two reasons, terrible controls, but also fear. Like, I was just like, what's going to attack me? What's going to jump out? And even as I've been playing like Resident Evil Zero and Remastered, there's been a couple times where things have jumped out and I've just been like, oh my gosh, you know. I didn't remember that, or I completely forgot that they even existed.
Well, I don't know. Does that rush ever make it enjoyable for you though? Cause I do like the rush of that fear sometimes. Like, that's again, what made Eternal Darkness so great, where there were some jump scares and some just shocking, holy crap moments in there that I liked looking back on it.
I wouldn't say that. I'm not into that stuff. Like, yeah. Even I like the survival aspect of it. I think that's why I like Resident Evil. And I even got through 10 chapters of The Evil Within because I like the whole, I don't have a lot of bullets. Kind of like that's why I like The Last of Us. I like the survival part of it. I'm not big on the horror part. And so,
yeah.
The Evil Within is like, to me, I know other people are like, that's not scary. That's fine. And maybe it's not really that scary. The 10 chapters I played, I wouldn't say I was really scared. It's just really unsettling. And so,
yeah, that disturbing aspect is what takes me from enjoying the fear
so
and the
I
jump
don't
to
like
messing
that.
With it. Yeah, like Saw, the Saw movies, and I don't want to keep talking about movies too much, but movies like Saw or games that are similar. I think we talked about Manhunt a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
that second one made me start to feel disturbed and gross. The first one was bad enough as it was. I'm surprised I got through it now that I think about it. But like the Saw movies, that's just like, and all these torture movies, they just don't do it for me. So any game that falls in that same category of just being super gross and disturbing for the sake of being super gross and disturbing, so I hope you enjoy it, but it's just not for me. But
yeah,
there are
like
definitely
that.
Some scary and even really gross games that I'm super into. So it really just depends. But in general, if a survival horror game comes out, I'm curious to hear what people think about it. Like, if it's some kind of masterpiece I need to try.
I was going to say, I think story is really important. Like, the reason...
It is. Yeah.
So I know some people that completed The Evil Within that some of our listeners are going to listen to this and say, Derek, you're a wuss. Why didn't you finish it? I could have finished it. It's just once I found out that the story didn't really have a payoff that I should care about, after 10 chapters of doing the same thing over and over and being uncomfortable, I finally decided it's not that and I usually do try to finish my games. I decided it's not that important to finish this game. Like, I never felt like, oh, I have to go back and beat that game. I feel like I got what I wanted to get out of it. I enjoyed it. It's a great game. If people talk about it, I praise it. But there was no story that paid off. See, one of the things that I liked about the first Resident Evil is I liked the mystery behind it all. And I'm going back, obviously, when I first played through it with friends and my brother. What drove me to sit there and go through all that was not the jump scares. It was what's going on? What is this Wesker guy doing? And why is there zombies in this house? And I wanted to know. I needed answers. The story hooked me, even though it's terribly acted and voice acted. But
yeah, no, I got you. That's actually maybe something to get some input from anyone who's listening too. And maybe you want to harp on us for being babies.
Yeah, go ahead.
For not, and or maybe you've got a take on it that's a little different. Like, why do people enjoy, not just in movies, but especially in games, stuff that's just just super nasty, super gross. In some cases, I can see it being cool artwork and cool design. In other cases, I'm like, that's just trying to be disgusting.
Well, so see, and that's the weird thing about me, Tim. Like, you're asking, like, well, you know, why are y'all into, you know, these disgusting things? And I just said I'm not really into it when it comes to, like, horror. But some of my favorite franchises, like Mortal Kombat, is one of my all-time favorite franchises.
Yeah.
I didn't like Mortal Kombat because it was a great fighter. Yeah, it had some cool things with the fighting mechanics, but I really loved it because I loved ripping people in half.
Well, dude, what kid didn't grab the recent version of GamePro? Or Nintendo Power even, or remember that one magazine they had?
Game Informer.
There was one like Tips and Tricks or something like that. Yeah. So you grab those types of magazines, you find the little helper section for Mortal Kombat, and you open it up, and you sit there in front of your game, and you pull off every fatality you can for every character.
Yeah, I loved it.
You want to see it. You want to see him fry the skull or pull out the spine or whatever it is. I remember that. And that was just realistic enough to kind of scare me, and that was kind of that rush of feeling scared. Mm-hmm. But also, you're doing that with buddies, and you're all kind of going, whoa! You know, you're all laughing about it, and you're reacting to it. That's different than something that hits really home on a personal level. For example, maybe something involving kids or family starts to disturb me. Or if it's just simply like, again, that torture porn thing, like maybe it comes down to whether it's a character or maybe even the game developer almost seems to enjoy the suffering being caused, and that comes across one way or another, whether I'm misinterpreting it or not.
Gross.
That's when I start to get turned off by it. That's probably what turned me off to Manhunt 2, was it almost seemed like whoever made this game, either they themselves or maybe the characters they created in this game, there was so much enjoyment of the violence and suffering and just absolute disgusting stuff that was happening that I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
I can take it up to a certain point, but after a while, I'm like, it just felt pure evil. I had to get away from it. So, anyway.
No, I understand. It makes sense. But like I said, with the Mortal Kombat and even, like, Doom, the new Doom trailer that we talked about last week, and you're like, it's ultra-violent. I'm not going to be able to really play it. It's not really, like, a selling point for you. That was a selling point for me, watching you, like, slice and dice things. Again, it's not set in, to me, like a horror, like scenarios, but it's just this like fantasy world of killing demons, and I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the kind of game that floats in the, maybe I'll play it category. That's not one that I would say, because of that aspect, I won't. It's just more of, yeah, I'm not excited about it, but maybe I'll play it. So, all right. Good to know that you hate awesome games like Portal.
Yeah.
And I hate all racing, fighting, and horror games. That's pretty much what we just said, right?
I think that's what people are going to hear. I think
The
reality is I just hate The Witness and I hate Sony fanboys. I think that's all I said.
But we love Kaz.
I love Kaz.
All right, so let's talk about some gaming news. There's a whole bunch of things that happened this week. Again, I mean, it's been a very busy year already, with announcements, with whether it's game announcements, with rumors, or even with companies making changes. There's all sorts of things that have happened. So what I want to do is, and I liked the way we did this last time, so I want to do it again, where I'll name either a couple of games for game announcements, that'll be our first section, and then you'll pick one, or it'll be a couple of headlines or topics for a news article, and then we'll pick one to talk about. This does two things. Number one, it allows us to really focus in on a handful of things total to really discuss, and it also allows everyone listening to at least hear the headlines, and if you're interested in hearing something that we don't pick to talk about, then you can go check it out for yourself. So here we go. Let's talk about games that have been announced. Some of these already exist on some platform and are now being announced for another platform. And some of these, no one knew about at all, and they've been announced now by their developer or publisher, and they're coming. So, here are the first three game announcements, and you got to pick one of these for us to talk about. The first one is Knights and Bikes. It's coming to the PS4 and PC.
Mm-hmm.
It's a co-op action-adventure game. Kind of has a visual style that I would describe as similar to Costume Quest, if you played those a little bit, or Tearaway, maybe, combination of those two. So that's the first one, Knights and Bikes. The second one is called Dungeons 2. It's a game that's already available on the PC, and it's coming to PS4. And it's an RTS that's been compared to Overlord, if you ever played Overlord.
Excited about that.
I know you love RTS games. And then the last one is Party Hard. It's an indie game, kind of has an action stealth vibe to it. It's pretty dark humor throughout, and it's called Party Hard. It's already available on PC and mobile, and it's coming to PS4. So which one do you want to look hear more about? Knights and Bikes, Dungeons 2, or Party Hard?
All right, so the goal here is for me to pick one.
Pick one.
But I seriously want to just... Can I push, like, the pass button, and we just go to the next, like, section or something?
No, I'm going to read about Knights and Bikes. I'm making the call. I'm going to read about Knights and Bikes. Check out Dungeons 2 and Party Hard if you guys are interested, but they're already released on other platforms.
Tim is being rebellious. Clearly, I don't want to hear about any of these shit games.
All right. So, this in an article on the PlayStation blog, Rex Kroll, one of the co-founders of Foam Sword, wrote an article about this new game that's coming, Knights and Bikes. So the developers of this game have worked on titles like Little Big Planet, Tearaway, Ratchet and Clank. You can kind of see the influences there in the art style. You're really...
Don't even get me started. You just named off like most of the games I hate in life.
You're super excited. So they formed a... It's Rex Kroll and Muyu. They formed a development company called Foam Sword. And they've decided to put together this game called Knights and Bikes. It's a co-op action adventure game inspired by their childhoods as well as some of their favorite movies and games like The Goonies, Earthbound, and Secret of Mana. That's what caught my attention. I love The Goonies, I love Earthbound, and I love Secret of Mana.
I like Secret of Mana.
Knights and Bikes takes place on Penferzi Island off the coast of Cornwall, a place of medieval legend and modern tourism. Our story starts in 1987 when the island is under threat from a number of forces, ancient and modern, which can only be tackled by the island's most overlooked heroes, its children. So you play as Nessa and Demelza and their gang of helpers, and basically you are on this adventure together. It's this co-op action adventure. So sounds kind of fun. I'm one of those games that I will probably completely forget about if it doesn't review super well. If it comes out with, it's a 5.5,
like
it's a 6.5, then it'll quickly slide under the radar and disappear. But if it turns out that it's a high-quality game, then I am interested by the art style there. So Knights and Bikes.
And when are these releasing?
I don't think Knights and Bikes has a release date yet.
Yeah, that sounds like a PS Plus game, like on launch.
It definitely could be. I'm glancing down through the article here. I don't see... It just says it's coming to the PS4 as well as PC. So it doesn't tell me when it's coming out. So, but when I find out that release date, Derek, I will tell you when to make sure you don't look for it.
Oh, could you please just like tag me and everything? Because I really want to know.
But Derek, this game's out. Make sure you don't buy it.
Do it for all three of these. I mean, Dungeons 2, we just had a conversation about how much I love RTSs. Party Hard sounds like a... Who is that stupid rock band guy who's talked about partying hard? Andrew WK.
We're gonna move on.
Sounds
to the next
like
set.
His mobile video game.
Okay, we're gonna move on. All right. So let's talk about the next set of games that have been announced recently. So let me give you
know
three.
Who I'm talking about? Andrew WK or whatever.
I know exactly who you're talking about. Let me just give you three game titles and you pick one. Shiren the Wanderer, and I'm gonna mispronounce this next one. Tokiden 2, or Night in the Woods. Which one do you want to hear about?
Tukiden.
Is that how you say it? Tukiden?
That's how I say it.
Tukiden. I didn't play the first one. I know you played at least a little bit, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like a Monster Hunter type game.
All right, so here's the news. Tukiden 2's first details and screenshots have now been released. So Koei Tecmo has opened the official Japanese website for the sequel, providing the first official details and screenshots for its open-world hunting game. So here's some of the details they provide. From the village that becomes the player's base, this advertising is getting in my way, to the battlefield, the world is represented through one big open-world map. After leaving the verdant village, the power of demons known as Oni will warp space and time and spirit world and fill the area. The spirit world is full of dangerous gas, so players must build a foothold and gradually expand their course of action. From towns buried in thick forests, temples and volcanoes boiling with lava, and fortresses floating in the sky, Tokiden 2 is a new form of hunting action game that lets players explore a fantastic world where you'll encounter various characters and oni. Sounds pretty cool. They're talking about things like parts destruction action, where you destroy specific parts of their body. They've evolved that fighting mechanic even further than they did in the last game. They're going to have the complete parts destruction, where you destroy the Oni's life force part by part, is also possible. So there's just some interesting things they're adding in there, or maybe expanding on the existing game. It's going to be a brand new story, of course. It should be. It's a full sequel. And there's going to be new co-op play. As a hunting action game, the familiar online multiplayer element will also be intact. So a new type of co-op play is planned, although they don't specify that. And then they outline a few of the characters, which I won't go into right now. Feel free to go and check that out. This article is on Gamatsu.com, but I'm sure you could quick Google search T-O-U-K-I-D-E-N 2. And find some of these details for yourself. So, Derek, first, just initial thoughts on that announcement that's coming out?
Oh, I enjoyed the first one, and they're pretty popular games on the Vita. So I imagine this Tokiden 2 is going to probably come out on the Vita and PS4. Cool. And I will definitely pick it up. I don't know if it would be something I'll buy right away or just wait like I did with this past one
for
it to go on sale.
All right, let's go to our next set of games. We've got, let me just read you three titles again. We've got Quantum Break. There's an announcement about that. We've got Dungeons & Dragons, an RPG that's coming out. And then the new Walking Dead game called Michonne. Which one do you want to hear about?
We got to talk about Quantum Break.
Yeah, so these headlines are Quantum Break's coming to PC, Dungeons & Dragons RPG, there's a brand new one coming to Xbox One and PS4, and the Walking Dead game Michonne has a release date, which is coming up surprisingly soon. So check those out. We're going to talk about Quantum Break, though, in an article from GameSpot, as well as really every other outlet was reporting on this today. It's big news that Quantum Break PC version is confirmed. And not only that, if you buy it on the Xbox One, you will have access for free to the PC version, as well as Alan Wake and all of the additional Alan Wake content.
Yeah, it's amazing news. First of all, I'm really hyped for this game. I said that when we talked about The Division, that was like a top three game that I was, you know, hyped for. Quantum Break's got to be one of those three as well. And the more they keep releasing, they released a new trailer as well to go along with it to kind of like hype people, and it worked for me because while I'm excited, I'm still a little nervous because I'm like, it's a new IP. I do trust the developer. In case y'all don't know, it's Remedy, who created Max Payne, Max Payne 2, and then they created, obviously, Alan Wake. All three of those games are pure quality. They're fun games. They're good. I wouldn't say masterpieces. I would just say they're really good when it comes to gameplay. The one thing I've always felt like they've fallen short is storytelling, which obviously is very important to both myself and Tim. So I'm really interested but nervous on what they're doing with Quantum Break. So this news was huge because there was like rumors that it was going to come out on PC, and as somebody who owns both, I can generally get my games cheaper on PC. But I had already decided, I was like, well, I'm definitely just going to buy it on the Xbox One because I won't have to worry about any, you know, issues or anything like that. I can just log on and play, but I'm interested in PC as well. Now I'm going to get it on both, and then I get all the content, not only from Alan Wake, which includes, I think, two DLC, but it also comes like with American Nightmare, which is a separate game. So they're really giving you...
Oh.
Three games, so if you order Quantum Break...
Wait, hang on. American Nightmare is a separate game from Alan Wake? I thought it was the DLC.
No, it's a separate game. It's a standalone, like, arcade-type shooter.
There you go. Didn't know that.
It's less horror and more action.
Cool. All right, now, I remember last week you actually used, specifically, Quantum Break as an example of a game when you're choosing to buy PC or console. You use that as an example that, hey, if they announce a PC version of this, I'm still going to buy Xbox One. It's almost like you knew this was coming.
I'm really smart. I'm really smart.
I don't like to give you props, but that was pretty impressive. Like, this is the exact game that you called. You guys should go back and listen if you haven't. I believe it was, it might have been part one of episode five. It was a kind of a longer episode. He split in half. Go listen to that. Derek totally calls this without really meaning to call it. So they, not only are they releasing it as kind of a combo pack if you buy it on Xbox One, but it's also coming very soon. It's coming on April 5th, for those of you who don't remember. As long as you place this pre-order by April 4th, you can get a copy of Xbox One and PC versions, as well as all of the Alan Wake content for that game. Also, this game supports saves across Xbox One and PC. Now, there's no cross-platform play, but it's going to support saves across both.
I don't think there is multiplayer for this game.
Which, that comment kind of confused me, but I'm assuming that means there is cross-save.
Yeah.
So for those of you who game on both your Xbox One and your PC, if I'm reading this correctly, you should be able to share saves between those games, which is very cool. Then you don't have the issue that, you know, I hear someone like Derek talk about a lot, like, oh, on the PS4 version or PC version, I got this far, and on this version, I got this far. Like, no, this is, you can track your progress
across. And that's what I think a lot of people don't realize, is that's a really awesome feature that Microsoft's really pushing. I've heard some people complaining about, oh, you're sending all your exclusives to PC. Look, Microsoft, first of all, is not competing against PC. They've never been competing. By the way, Sony is not competing against PC. They don't care. They're competing against other consoles. And so Microsoft doesn't really care if they release a game on PC, because they're like, A, we can get more money, and B, it's not our competition. So doing this is really smart, because they're opening it up to more and more gamers. Plus, their future vision is basically they're turning consoles into PCs. And so they want to be able to stream all your games on your Xbox One onto your PC and vice versa. I really do think it's going to get to the point where you're going to be able to play PC games on your Xbox One. And obviously you can right now play your Xbox One games on your PC. So I think that's what they're going for.
So let me ask you this. Are you planning on watching the TV show as of right now? Does that
Absolutely.
Interest you at all?
If it's really cheesy, then it'll turn me off and it'll ruin my experience. They're putting a lot of weight on this. Like, I've done, I won't say a lot of research, but I've watched multiple videos. I've done enough research that I feel like I'm educated on what Quantum Break is. And I know for a lot of people, the reason they don't have hype is because they don't even know what it is. But I'll give you all a little bit of backstory and what they're trying to do here.
Yeah, I need it, because I actually haven't read or watched a lot of the stuff they've put out, and I can't really give you a solid reason why, other than it's brand new IP. It seems a little confusing. I know they've changed it a lot since they first announced it.
It is a really confusing game, and it's because I think the plot and the story is going to even be confusing. But here's their goal. Their goal is you're going to have in-game cutscenes. So, Tim, it's a 9.5 already.
Yes.
They are going to have in-game cutscenes. They are going to have a regular third-person cover-based slash action adventure type shooter. It is going to be more heavy on action than it would be on cover-based. That is confirmed from the developer themselves. So it's not going to be like an Uncharted or even a Gears of War, where you're constantly taking cover and that's all you're doing. You're going to be taking cover when you have to, but you're going to be using a lot of your special abilities and powers. You know what? I'm going to give him props, because he said it perfectly. Dan Phillips, who is a listener, said it perfectly. He said it's basically like Uncharted and Infamous combined.
Okay. All right.
And I completely agreed when he said that, based off what I've said or heard and what I've read.
Well done, Dan. I like that.
Yes, good job. You're going to have gunplay. You're going to have cover base, but you have the ability to bend time, and you have superpowers. So you're going to have that Infamous type aspect where you are like a superhero.
Okay.
So that's the gameplay side. Now, for the narrative side, It's going to have the in-game cutscenes. It's going to have great voice acting by top-of-the-line Hollywood actors. I shouldn't say top-of-the-line. We're not talking about, you're not getting Leonardo DiCaprio. But you're getting some well-known actors and actresses that have been in shows and movies that you're going to immediately...
You've got the guy from X-Men. You've got the kid from Lord of the Rings.
Exactly. You're going to immediately recognize these people. Yeah. There's at least four actors. As soon as I saw them, I was like, I know who they are, and I know what they're from. You have the Littlefinger from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
He's the villain, I believe.
Yeah.
It might be a little bit more gray than that, but he also has superpowers. I think he has the ability to bend time as well. But anyways, so you have that. While you're playing through the game, each section or chapter that you complete, you then go into a show, and then it's all the actors that are doing all the voice acting work for the game are now actually live acting in a complete show. Now, the show is impacted based off your gameplay decisions. And one of the things they explain, this is, again, straight from the developer, it's not me screwing it all up or just making stuff up. There's a specific story that Remedy wants to tell. So none of the decisions that you make in the game are going to change the ending. So that's the very first thing that you need to understand.
I think that's good, by the way.
It's not open-ended. It is a specific narrative that they're trying to tell. Cool. So think of like a Telltale Games. You're making a lot of decisions in a Telltale Games. Things are going to be impacted. For instance, people could die. People could start hating you that maybe in your gameplay they like you, whereas they hate me. Or you have, I'm just making up a name, Roderick survives, whereas I kill him. So there's decisions and things Roderick. Like that will, yeah, Roderick. We all want to kill Roderick. Mm. That can happen, but the end of the game, the end result is all going to be the same.
Okay.
And that's what's going to happen with the show. Let's say somebody dies in my gameplay that had the opportunity to survive. He will not be in my show anymore. So they've obviously filmed multiple scenes to impact your decisions and choices mm-hmm. that you make.
Right.
So this is all very, very, at least for me personally, extremely intriguing. Because the way I look at it is you're taking Uncharted, which is one of my favorite franchises, Infamous, which I'm a huge fan of, you're taking those gameplay elements and you're twisting them together and you're saying, okay, we're presenting something kind of new here. And you gotta obviously give Max Payne some props as well. They created Max Payne. It's very similar to Max Payne as well when it comes to like slowdown and bullet time type action. So you're taking that and then you're combining it with this really deep time-twisting story. So as you can see through my little conversation or my little spiel right here, I'm really passionate about this game. I'm really excited. It's definitely a top three game that I want to release and that I want to love. I really, really hope it's good. I really, really hope it executes the way I believe it's going to. I said this online. I'm going to say it again here. For anybody who's listening who didn't see me post about this, I have almost the same amount of respect for Remedy that I have for a Naughty Dog. When they wow. say they're going to release a game, there is a faith or a trust that I have that it's going to be quality. And that faith and that trust is more in the gameplay than it is on the narrative side. Which, again, I'm not taking anything away from, like, Alan Wake or Max Payne. I think they're still good games. I think they still have great narratives. But they're not at the level, to me, as a Naughty Dog or Irrational Games. And I'm really curious sure. to see if they can pull this off. So,
okay.
Yeah, as you can tell, very hyped. Very excited.
Well, it's coming soon, man. You got less than 2 months now till it comes out. So,
well, yeah, I got to ask you after
all right,
I just
explained. Here's our last little set of game.
Hold on. Because I explained that to you, did I sell you on that game?
You've got my interest level where it was not before, and that is, maybe I should check this out. That's where I am now, as opposed to, eh.
You cheap ass.
I used to be at, eh, but now I'm like, maybe I should.
All right, I did my job, and hopefully Remedy's check will clear this week.
Yeah. I'm hoping they paid you well for that one.
All right.
So let's get to our last little set of games here. So they announced a Sega 3D Classics collection for the 3DS. So we could talk about that, get the details on that. We could talk about a new game announced called The Flame and the Flood, coming out for Xbox One and PC. They described that as a Riverside roguelite game. Or we could talk about Downwell, the popular iOS game that is now coming to PS4 and Vita.
Okay. I just want to talk about The Flame and the Flood because I have no idea what a Riverside roguelite is.
Right. The other two are a little self-explanatory. You can find out info about Downwell. Just the big news is that it's coming to Vita and PS4. That's cool. And then, of course, the Sega Classics Collection on 3DS. Again, the only details you would need to figure out there is which games are coming. So go check that out to figure out which games are included in that set. So let's talk about The Flame and the Flood. This article on Polygon kind of walks us through the details here. And by the way, the little subtitle underneath The Flame and the Flood description is that a country music star recorded the game's soundtrack. So that's one of their hooks, apparently, is with the sound. Pretty short article here, so let me just read it to you. The Flame and the Flood, the Riverside roguelite made by the alumni of Irrational Games, there you go, will launch on Windows, PC, Mac, and Xbox One on February 24th. This is coming out very soon. In the game, a girl and her dog are navigating the backwaters of a forgotten post-societal America, requiring them to forage for provisions, craft weapons and useful tools, and defeat predators. The rivers and rapids one traverses are procedurally generated. The Flame and the Flood are also features an original soundtrack composed by the alt-country recording artist Chuck Reagan. For more on the game, you can go see the preview. They've got a preview on Polygon from E3. So this is not the first time the game's announced, but this is the first time that the release date's been confirmed, and it's coming out soon. Flame and the Flood is by the Molasses Flood, a studio formed by veterans of the BioShock series who were laid off in Irrational's sudden closure in early 2014. Others who joined the team have worked on series such as Rock Band, Guitar Hero, and Halo. So definitely some musical influences there, mm-hmm. as well as some story-based games there too, with, you know, BioShock and Halo being a part of that too. So, well, what are your thoughts on The Flame and the Flood? You interested there? Have you looked at the images at all?
No, I have not. I'm interested just because it's a Riverside roguelite.
Yeah, it kind of looks like, I'm looking at the image here, trying to think of what to describe it as. It's got like a modern day cartoon look to it, almost like something you'd see coming out of DreamWorks, but it's zoomed out a little bit. We talked about Don't Starve, you know, it's kind of like they got that same angle, but it's got more depth to it, almost like, what was that? There was a Day of the Dead cartoon that came out last year. It kind of has that type of a look in the art style as I'm glancing at it here.
I have to look at it.
Looks interesting. Looks kind of interesting. I'm not really sure if it's something that that I'll play, but it'll be on the store in about a week and a half. So be sure to check that one out, you guys. The Flame and the Flood. It's coming to Xbox One and PC. So be on the lookout for that. I'm sure Xbox One store will highlight it when it drops. So
yeah, it looks interesting. I'll check it out. I mean,
yeah.
First of all, it says made by alumni of Irrational Games, which I heard you mention that. That immediately intrigues me just because that's my favorite studio that doesn't exist.
Yep. So there's a lot of games coming out. Some of these announcements are not brand new announcements, but it's either new news about some of these games or details about when they're dropping, or in some cases a port over, or hey, a brand new game's been announced. So there's a lot of stuff here. Be sure to get on some of these websites, whether it's the PlayStation blog or Polygon or IGN or GameSpot, and check out some of these new game announcements. Lots of good stuff coming. All right, so we've got two rumors that I've picked up on over the past week or so, and I wanted to get you to pick one of these, and we'll talk about it. The first rumor that I picked up on was the Onimusha rumor that discussions have begun at Capcom. So we can talk about that, read that article. Or we can talk about this potential leaked release date of Titanfall 2. Which one of those do you want to look into?
Can we actually cheat and talk about both?
We can. Let's look at Onimusha first.
Yeah, let's do it both, because I'm really intrigued by both of them.
So Onimusha, for those of you who aren't familiar, it is a series that was set kind of back in that, I guess it was feudal Japan, but it was really kind of more of a fantasy feudal Japan setting. Really cool action games. So here's the article on Gamatsu.com. Man, it keeps throwing ads at me. All right, so discussions to revive the Onimusha series are happening at high levels at Capcom, company executive producer Yoshinori Ono told the Daily Star. I've spoken internally with people who made Onimusha with me originally and talked about maybe how interesting it would be to revisit that series, Ono said. But fans should know that we're not further down the road than discussion phase. Right now, I'm so focused on Street Fighter V, I'm not really in a position to start the same level of battle I had in getting Street Fighter IV made. If any of you remember, it took a little while for them to get from Street Fighter III, which was not necessarily the biggest hit, and then to get Street Fighter IV made, which kind of revitalized that franchise. Mm-hmm. But he does go on to reassure fans, all I can do now is reassure fans that conversations are happening at high levels. We need to realize we realize the need for different series to maybe come back into the forefront. Although there's nothing really to talk about right now, I'm sure in the future there will be news on a variety of series that will keep the fans happy. Fan favorites are going to come back.
So is he talking about releasing a new Onimusha game? That they're just talking about that at a high level? Or a remaster?
The reason why I would think it's either a reboot or a continuation is because he talks about reviving the Onimusha series.
And that's what I was thinking, is if they're talking about it at a high level, obviously they're going to look at old numbers and stuff like that, but it couldn't have sold real well towards the end. Like, I think Onimusha 4 was the last one? Or it might have been like a side game as well.
The last one I played was 3.
Yeah.
When they went to Paris.
Yeah, but I think there was Onimusha 4. And or maybe it was a different, like, Onimusha with a different name, but it wasn't actually called 4. But anyways, the point I'm trying to make is they may not revive the game until they release, like, a remaster just to see how interested people are. Now, granted, this isn't, like, a PS3 game.
Yeah, I think we
game.
Should... we wouldn't be surprised at all to see, like, a HD collection of some kind.
See, that's what I think they're going to do. I think they're going to test the waters by releasing at least the first one HD. But again, this isn't like bringing The Last of Us from PS3 to PS4. This is a PS2 game coming to a PS4. So maybe they won't even do a remaster. Maybe they'll just do what like some of the PS2 games are doing now, and that's just up-resing them to 1080. Giving you some trophies and
like
seeing how well they sell.
Drop.
Yeah, see how well they sell for $15. Mm-hmm. And if we buy them up, then go, okay, this series is still alive.
Yeah, think about what era they come from. That's the PS2 era. That's not as simple as the PS3 era where you can, you know, quickly up-res. They're already in HD. Now you can just kind of fine-tune and improve like things like The Last of Us or God of War 3. Mm-hmm. Now you'd have to essentially revamp the whole game.
Which costs a lot of money.
That would be crazy.
Takes a lot more time, and I think the smart thing to do would be to do what I just said, and that's up-res at least the first one, put it out there as a tester, and say, all right, it's 1080p, it's got full trophy support, are you going to support it? And if not, sorry.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see what they do there. I do get the feeling, though, that it's more of a really, really... really early tease of what might be to come in 2017, 2018. Even in terms of any kind of reboot, remaster, PS2 release, I think we won't hear much from Onimusha other than perhaps, like you just said, downloadable PS2 games, possibly on the PSN store. Other than that, I can't imagine them doing anything with Onimusha for the
next.
You
know what? I would
years.
Love if they did that. You know, they don't really have to. I know there's some big Onimusha fans, and I owned all the games. I played them. I enjoyed them. Anytime it's brought up as a conversation, I want them to bring them back. But I would totally be okay with just 1080p versions of it and just seeing if it sells well enough. And if it does, bring us a reboot.
Yeah, so we'll keep tabs on that. It's kind of cool that the conversations are happening, though. The one takeaway I'll take from that is, you know, the developers are listening to the fans. So that's kind of cool. They know that the fans want it. So, cool. All right, well, let's talk about Titanfall 2. It sounds like, according to a toy company release, that Titanfall 2 might be coming this year alongside action figures. This is a big oops. So, in an article on GameSpot, let's get the original story here. McFarlane Toys has announced that Titanfall 2 will release this year alongside the toy company's line of action figures based on the first-person shooter. They announced in a press release that the toys and Titanfall 2 would launch in winter 2016, according to a promotional image on the McFarlane site, and the figures will come in at 7 inches tall. So in an effort to promote their upcoming action figures, they accidentally outed what might be the release date for Titanfall 2. We could be looking at a major game release announcement spoiler here for something like, let's say, E3.
Didn't I say that I thought this game was coming out in winter, like the last show?
You did. You did. Yep, that was one of your predictions, because Destiny 2 looks like a hard fail. So you went ahead and went with Titanfall 2. You did.
All right, so we'll see if that plays out correctly.
So in an update, they reached out to EA, and EA, their response was...
We don't respond to rumors.
No, it's more than that, actually. They said, McFarlane Toys will be releasing toys inspired by Titanfall in winter of 2016. We have yet to provide a release date for the next Titanfall experience from Respawn. So they're kind of trying to reframe and rephrase what the McFarlane Toy Company said, and I imagine there are probably some pretty heated phone calls behind the scenes after that went down.
Like, you idiots!
Yeah.
We just give you this great deal, and you... No, I do think this game's coming out this
fall. I do now. I didn't before. I thought we were looking at 2017 for that, but now I feel pretty confident that it's going to be one of our big holiday releases.
I think it's going to be EA's big fall shooter. Yep. I know people think a new Battlefield's going to come out, and maybe it will.
I don't think so.
But if Titanfall 2's coming out, I don't think it will. I think Battlefield might be delayed until like 2017. Yep. Not the fall. Maybe they do a spring for Battlefield. And then, you know, obviously then you have Battlefront as well coming out.
Yep.
Probably 2018.
All right. Let's get to some other news items here. Those are pretty interesting. I'm excited both to hear more about Onimusha and Titanfall 2. But let me give you three headlines. You pick one of these. Number one is Final Fantasy IX was kind of stealth released on mobile and PC, or it's coming to PC. Microsoft accidentally adds Red Dead Redemption to its backwards compatibility list. And this third one we kind of already talked about a little bit, but Titanfall 2 is now said to possibly have a campaign, maybe a TV series, and will likely be multi-platform. So if you want to learn more about Titanfall 2, talk about that some more, Red Dead Redemption backwards compatibility, or Final Fantasy IX.
Well, we already talked about Titanfall 2, so I think we talked about it last show. We're good. I don't care about Microsoft accidentally releasing something. Let's do what I'm really excited about is Final Fantasy IX coming to mobile and PC.
So have you played Final Fantasy IX?
I have not.
I'm sure you've heard about it, though.
Out of all the Final Fantasy games, like the 7s, the 8s, and 9s, anything before 10, this one, when I watch like a trailer... It has the setting that I'm most interested in.
Yeah.
And the characters, besides the lead character, he kind of looks like a douche. But everybody else looks pretty cool.
He's kind of a classic, rogue thief type character who's in it for himself, but then, of course, ends up having, you know, going for the greater good, falling for the girl, but also doing the right thing. He's kind of a standard Han Solo hero archetype.
So I'm really interested in this. I almost bought it on my phone, but I'm going to hold off and get it on PC.
Well, an article on IGN came out, I think, a couple days ago when this game released, and basically just said Final Fantasy IX is now available on iOS and Android devices. So congratulations. Go buy it. I think it's only $17.
But I heard it was supposed to have a 20% discount, and I've yet to see the 20% discount.
Maybe that'll happen when they really promote it, because it was kind of a stealth release.
Yeah.
And if it weren't for these articles, I wouldn't have known about it. So maybe they're going to have like a big announcement, and now it's cheaper. Who knows? But it originally released back on the PS1 back in 2000, right towards the end of that console's life cycle. And I, for one, was thrilled with that game. I got it shortly after it released. I absolutely loved it. It's one of my favorite Final Fantasies for me personally, and I know it's a very personal list. I mean, we could spend an entire series of episodes, if we had the right people. I know you're not as big of a Final Fantasy geek as I am. Series of episodes talking about which ones are best and why. But for me personally, Final Fantasy IX is easily in the top three of all of their Final Fantasy games. I love it. The characters are great. The story is interesting. There's really nothing about it. Everything from the fighting system to even the little side card game they have you do. All of that is so fun. The world they create, it's beautiful. I think the graphics still hold up well, considering it's a PS1 game. I mean, sure, it's got some pixelation there, but it's much better looking than 7, and I think it's even better looking than 8. So I think it combines the best of those two worlds, where 8 was visually impressive, 7 had, you know, characters and a story that I cared more about. I think 9 combines the best of those two things and makes for an even better game than 7 and 8. It's really, really great. I can't recommend it enough. It's going to be, it looks like it says on February 10th to 21st, it's going to be 20% off. But you're saying you're not seeing that discount?
I didn't see it. I think today I even checked again. I have the Final Fantasy Portal
downloaded. Well, be sure to check it out. It looks like for Android, you're going to need to make sure you have 8 gigabytes of free space required to download, although it only takes up 4 gigs of memory. You need to have 8 gigs free to download. I'm not sure why that is.
Yeah, it's
why
still $17.
It's listed on the Google Play Store, and this is what they describe. Final Fantasy IX for mobile brings achievements, 7 game boosters like high speed and no encounter modes, autosave, and high definition movies and character models. Speaking of cutscenes, there are some very cool and very epic moments in this game. It's even right out the bat at the beginning. It also has one of the most endearing and adorable characters in Final Fantasy that's not a Moogle, and it is little Vivi. He's the little black wizard that you have right out of the gate, right at the beginning. It's kind of his story, at least to start, before you start connecting with the other characters. So really, really cool way they tell the story, especially at the beginning. It's a great opening to the game. No word yet on its release on PC, on Steam, but it does have a Steam page, and it says early 2016. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're looking at sometime in maybe March. It should drop on PC. Very exciting. I really hope that means it's coming to a PS4 with trophies. That's one I would definitely play through again to get those trophies and to play the game again, because it's good.
Well, I'll get it on PC. I think it will come. I think Final Fantasy, I think all the ones that are released on PC as updates will eventually make their way over to the PS4.
Yeah, I mean, they already have all the basics in place, everything from the achievements and the extras that they add for that. It already kind of is set up for trophies and things like that. So, all right, ready to pick the next one? This is our last set of news here.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, you want to talk about Rocket League Season 2? Do you want to talk about the ex-BioWare writer? We talked about him a few weeks ago, that he left BioWare.
Mm-hmm.
We could talk about official news from Ubisoft about Assassin's Creed, or we could talk about Watchdog news.
Let's talk Watchdog sequel. All
right, so just so you guys know, Rocket League Season 2 is live, and the Xbox One version drops on February 17th. I won't go through all the details for all those things right now, but be sure to check that out and be excited, Xbox One owners. David Gator from BioWare is now the creative director at Beamdog, a developer that's working on the next Baldur's Gate entry. So feel free to go read about that some more if you want to learn about what he's doing there. And Ubisoft has confirmed officially on their blog that there will be no brand new Assassin's Creed game in 2016. They're focusing on the next one in 2017. So those are kind of the short versions of those longer stories. Again, be sure to check those out when you have time. Let's talk about Watch Dogs, though. First of all, let me just, for full disclosure, I have not played Watch Dogs, the first one, yet. It's just kind of sitting there on my shelf, looking at me, waiting, wondering if I'm going to play it. So far, I've said no. So I've got Watch Dogs, haven't played it. I know you have, and if I remember correctly, you liked it, didn't love it. Is that an accurate statement?
No, I loved it.
Oh, you did love it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to the sequel.
Well, an article by Seth Macy from IGN says, Ubisoft has confirmed the follow-up to Watch Dogs will be releasing before the end of its 2017 fiscal year. The company reports its annual results in April, so the sequel will be coming out sometime before that. So basically between now, sometime in the next 14 months.
I think it's going to come out this fall. I think it's going to be announced at E3, and they're going to launch it this fall.
Very possible.
It's going to replace Assassin's Creed.
Well, one of the interesting things here as I'm reading the story is the statement from Ubisoft says this, in its official release. Ubisoft will launch a very high-quality lineup, the next installment of Watch Dogs, along with a new high-potential AAA brand with strong digital live services. So either Watch Dogs will be their winter, early spring release, which a lot more and more game companies are leaning towards, you know, a big release, whether it's, you know, Uncharted or Far Cry, Dying Light last year. More and more companies are not afraid of branching out from that holiday season, as we've seen. So maybe Watch Dogs 2 will land there and the new IP will land in the fall, or it might go the direction that you're saying and Watch Dogs 2 will be their tentpole release in the fall for the holiday season, and their new IP will drop early 2017. But either way, we are looking at two major releases from Ubisoft that are not Far Cry or Assassin's Creed sometime in the next 12 to 14 months.
Yeah, I think it's coming this winter. And then I think Assassin's Creed will release next fall/winter. And they're just going to keep doing it back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
And, you know, it's possible that Assassin's Creed could surprise us and come out earlier in the year as they're trying to mix things up. I think a big reason, and part of the blog post, I think, even kind of hints at this, a big reason they are taking a step back to what they call evaluate the franchise has to do with the poor sales numbers and poor amount of attention that Syndicate got. And, you know,
how bad did it sell? Do we have numbers?
I don't have the numbers. I wish I did.
I thought it hit the top 10 in sales for the month that it released, or either the following month or the month that it released, because I think it released in late October, so it probably hit.
It may have, but I mean, you were looking at a blockbuster success in Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag and a fairly monumental disappointment for many outlets and a lot of people with Unity,
mm-hmm.
although I don't agree that I don't think it's a bad game from what I've played, and I played a good amount of it, and you liked it.
Yeah.
I do know that in general, it is viewed as a negative mark on their track record for many, many reasons. And so that led to the very next installment of Syndicate looking kind of like Unity, but now it's set in London instead of Paris. And it just, the timing, the setting, all of those things played against it, I think.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. I would love to see, and I would encourage Assassin's Creed to come out early, because it's a series and a franchise that we're so used to seeing every year, and it releases every year in the same month. It's now getting crowded by a bunch of new IPs or just bigger franchises.
Mm-hmm.
I think releasing it like how they released the first Watch Dogs in, I believe, May, maybe releasing a new Assassin's Creed in 2017 in May would be a nice little change, because it would be not only in a month it's not used to, but predominantly May is not a overcrowded time period.
Right.
Or so I think doing something like that would be a smart business decision, but what do I know? I'm an idiot.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
I appreciate that.
No
what
problem.
Would you
it's,
say?
It's getting late. I'm feeling nice. All right. Let's close out our show here with a couple of recent game reviews. Let's talk about some of the big games. We just passed one of the bigger release days of 2016 so far on February 9th. And this month has already seen some rather large titles come out. So I'm going to have you guess what you think their average Metacritic rating is, unless you've already opened them and looked.
No, I haven't. So let's have fun with it.
All right, so let's go through these one at a time. Let's start with Firewatch. You played a little bit of it. I've played it and beat it. I really like that game. You so far seem to be enjoying that game. You've read a whole bunch about it. You've seen the reactions. What do you think the average Metacritic rating is for Firewatch, let's say, on the PS4?
I know it got some really high reviews, and then it got some, you know, 6s and 7s. So I'm going to go with 8.8.
So on the Metacritic rating, that would be an 88.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually a 76 on the PS4 Ooh. Version of Firewatch.
Really? Right. So some new reviews came in that did not like it.
That's based on 32 critics and everything from 100 from websites like The Gaming Age all the way down to some that are ridiculously low. Like they're giving a site called Quarter to Three credibility, and it's got a 40 rating out of 100. So yeah, they're kind of all over the place. The PC version averages a little bit higher. That's coming in at an 81.
Okay.
And then I don't know if that's to do with some of the frame rate issues. I did run into a few stutters here and there, especially when auto-saving. So, like, you would climb up a certain rock face and kind of trigger the next little event where you would, you know, get back on the radio and talk. The next thing was going to happen. And I did on the PS4 experience a few stuttery moments. Not
I'm
enough
sure
to kill the
that's
game,
on the PC, though, too.
I don't know if it is or not.
It probably runs the same way.
I don't
way.
Know if it is or not. But I do know the PC one is averaging 81, and they have a few more scores that have come in. So they are average 37 critic scores have come in for that one. So wow. Not bad. Not
PC
bad,
Master Race, they understand what a good game is.
I guess so. All right, let's take a guess at, we'll start with the PS4 version of Unraveled.
8.1.
Whoa, that's really close. It came in at an 80, so 8.0, basically, based on your 10-point scale. So yeah, people like this game quite a bit. And again, it's got as high as 100 from some outlets, all the way down to somewhere in the 6-7 range is where some of the mediocre ones are. But there are a lot of very positive reactions to this game.
Yeah, this is another one that I got to play a little bit, and I haven't gotten to play as much as I'd like. But after I get through this stressful February, maybe I'll get to it.
Man, it looks amazing. And I know some of our friends that are in the community there, guys like Jesse White and a few others, have posted some pictures of that game, and it just looks so good.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous game.
It looks really good. All right, so here's the major PC release that came out. Of course, PC is also getting games like Firewatch and Unravel. But the major PC exclusive platform release was XCOM 2. It came out on February 5th. What do you think the Metascore is for that game?
91.
Wow. Are you clicking on these?
No, I'm not.
All right, it was a 90. Okay. It's getting a 90 right now.
I just need to then say 80 and 90.
And that is from 61 review scores they're considering. It's averaging a 90 out of 100. That is a fantastic score. I mean, that already puts it in contention for one of the best PC games of the year. So that's great. I'm very excited for XCOM 2.
Yeah, I'll get it. Just got to wait for it to get cheaper.
All right, let's talk about the big expansion DLC pack that is essentially a quasi-sequel to Dying Light called The Following. What do you think The Following garnered?
I'm going to go with 79.
Close. The only platform that has enough critic scores to give it a Metacritic average is the PC, and they have a 77.
Okay.
Average Metacritic score. Not bad at all. Not bad at all. Although the user score, surprisingly, is actually higher than that. It is an 8.3.
I'll tell you what, Dying Light is a loved and beloved game. I mean,
it's loved and beloved.
Yeah. I don't even know if that makes sense, but
it does though somehow. Yeah.
So it is. It is. It's just you might hear somebody say, I couldn't get into it, but you never hear somebody or see somebody say, Dying Light is trash. It's a piece of nothing. It's a adored game. Many, many, many people enjoy it.
Cool. All right, lastly is a game that I know not many people care about, but I do like it, and that is Assassin's Creed Chronicles. I like that series. And then their third and final entry to this trilogy, Russia, came out. What do you think that average ended up being?
Well, just so you know, I did not click on any of these, but I track reviews, so like I didn't check them today, but like I've been checking.
That's kind of why I wanted you to guess. I figured you'd be pretty close on some of these.
Russia is probably like a 54.
It's actually a little higher than that. On the PlayStation 4, it's averaging a 59, and on Xbox One, it's getting a 62, with not enough coming in for PC to review that one.
Because nobody cares about crap games on PC. PC Master Race.
Yeah, I guess that's the case. I guess that's what it is. So here's the storyline based on those reviews, and I know there's a lot of other games. Those are the only five we'll talk about for right now. The storyline to me so far is there's been a lot of great games already in 2016. There's been a lot of really great games dropping, and this month is loaded with some great ones. March has some exciting ones. We'll talk about those, you know, things like The Division and Hitman. And then, of course, you get into April, we're looking at Quantum Break and Uncharted 4, and it gets crazy. This is a crazy year. 2016 is looking insane in terms of game releases.
It's all right. I'll probably retire from gaming after,
you will not.
After
you will,
this year.
You will not retire. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think this February is a huge month. I mean, we already talked about February 9th having so many great games coming out. I know I personally picked up Unravel, Firewatch, and The Following. But also, I mean, February 16th is Street Fighter V. February 19th is Fire Emblem. February 23rd is Far Cry Primal. I mean, it's... We can't even say every week. With Fire Emblem coming out on a Friday, it's like every 3 or 4 days, an amazing game is coming out.
Which is why, and I don't want to, we don't have to get into game length discussion right now, although that would be a good future topic.
I think that's why
the fact that Firewatch was a, I think it took me just over 4 hours, and I kind of took my time with it. That's why I liked that it was a short game. I got a full experience. I got the whole story. I enjoyed it. It's going to stick with me. It didn't overstay its welcome. I need a game like that just as much as I need a game like The Witcher 3 that takes me several months to get all the way through. So,
very true.
All right, so we are going to sign off for now. Thank you guys again for listening. Head over to the website, fathersofthegrind.com, or feel free to reach out to us via email, fathersofthegrind@gmail.com. Derek, any final words of wisdom for our listeners?
Yeah, stay happy.
See you guys.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things here.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?